If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Strohman. I excited today. I have the opportunity to spend some time with Coach Mack Brown. He is no doubt a legend to everybody in the Tar Heel Nation, and certainly he's done some incredible things that make even his rivals have to respect him. So thank you for being here, Coach.
Thank you, Dr. Strohman. I'm excited about our next hour.
Absolutely. So let's start off. Tell me where it all started. Like, where did you grow up and what brought you to sports at a young age?
Debbie, I was so lucky. I was raised in a small town in Tennessee, Cookeville, Tennessee. My grandfather was the love of my life. He was the local high school football coach that the stadium now is named after. He was the winningest high school football coach in Middle Tennessee history at that time. And he became the superintendent of schools. He ran all the recreation programs in the county. So I just worked for him. I loved him. He taught me how to fish. My dad wouldn't let me hunt because he's afraid I'd shoot somebody, I think. So I never got to hunt. But I ran all the Little League and Babe Ruth League baseball programs. And I worked on all the fields. And then my granddad and I would go down and stay at the little trailer at the lake. And we'd fish at night. We'd fish the next morning, go back to work. And he actually integrated the schools in our community when I was really, really young. So I was so fortunate with race that race was not an issue in my life. And I realize now he took a lot of criticism. But I remember going with Little League baseball team and my dad was driving and we stopped. And Dad walked in and I remembered the signs, the white bathrooms and the colored bathrooms. And Dad walked back out and we were all really hungry. And I was probably 10 or something. And Dad said, we're not going to eat here. And we left. So a couple of years later, I said, why didn't we eat there? And he said, they wouldn't let the kids of color eat.
Wow.
And I said, well, why didn't you bring some stuff out? He said, I wasn't going to eat those people's food. So I thought I was really lucky that I was taught at a very young age that people are people and the color of your skin shouldn't matter. So I was really, really blessed. And I want to be a great grandfather to my grandkids because my granddad was so good to me. So that's one of my goals here. I've got six grandkids. Sally and I have six grandkids and I love them and I want them to look back at their granddad like I looked at mine.
Well, I don't even have to ask you then about role models because clearly your granddad is very, very special. Now, baseball. So were you the type of athlete that was more of the quiet assassin like Barry Sanders or more of the big talker like Deion Sanders? Now, both athletes get the job done, but you as an athlete, what type of personality did you have in sports?
Doc, I've never been a talker. That's not my deal. My granddad taught me to show class at all times, to be humble and be respectful of our opponents. So I've gotten some criticism some in coaching because everybody says he's a player's coach because he's too nice. I don't think you can be too nice as long as you're disciplined and as long as you're honest and as long as you're direct and you're consistent with who you are. So my motto as a player and now it's kind of, I didn't know it at that time, but now I know who I am and what I want. I want to be fair to everybody. I want to be consistent. I want you to know who I am every day that you talk to me. And I want to always do what I know is the right thing to do. And those are three principles that we teach to our players every day. Be fair. We don't have racial issues if we're fair.
That's
right.
Be
fair. But come on, man. Just do what's right and do it every day. Don't get up one day and be a screamer. And the next day you're really quiet and everybody's got to wonder who you are and what you are. Be you and be consistent. And then if we always do what's right, then you can sleep really well at night. You don't have to worry about whether you did something good or bad or what you told people. Sometimes people, Debbie, think I'm too direct, but it's because I feel like I should tell the truth.
That's right.
And if you tell the truth up front and people get upset, that's better than lying to them. And then 4 years later, they know you're a liar. So I'd rather tell people exactly what I think. And then I'll listen. I can learn. If I'm wrong.
Well, you just dropped so many pearls of wisdom in that comment. Everything from showing up and being authentic. Now, I know today's athletes are often allowed to show emotion and dance on the sidelines. Is that, I know it's not your preference, but how do you manage that as a head coach?
I think the most important thing, Doc, for me is that they have fun.
Good.
But they do it within a professional way and a classy way, because I do not want them to be hurt when they get out of here. In our bubble, they live one life. What I've learned, and I've really learned through the social injustice issues we've seen even over the last year and a half or two here, that have made me rethink things for years, that in our bubble, their lives are different. Our kids' lives are different, black and white, than when they leave our bubble, because we don't have racism in our bubble. Mm-hmm. So I made the awful mistake of thinking for years that we don't have racism. Mm-hmm. Well, we do when they leave our bubble. And that's the hard thing. I heard my friends say, yeah, I don't want my son to drive because he's black. And I said, come on, man. You know, maybe every now and then, but that's not right. And then we see some despicable things that have happened for the last year. So it's real out there. So what I've told our guys is, I want you to have a voice, but I want it to be through conversation. Mm-hmm. And I want it to be well thought out, intelligent conversation.
Yes.
That people will listen and respect you. Don't just scream all the time. Mm-hmm. If you get mad and scream all the time, nobody's going to listen. They're just going to say, ah, you're black. You're just angry. You don't really understand. And that, what I've learned is, I don't understand. There's a lot of stuff I don't understand, and I'm learning. But what I've told them is, let me help you with a voice if you feel like you have pressure to speak for change, but you're afraid to. And I got that. I never thought of an assistant coach, black or white, but especially of color, that would be afraid to have an opinion. Never thought of that till this year. And it's stupid of me not to have thought of it, but I never thought of it, because I never looked at a person's color when I was trying to make a decision on whether they were right or not. And then we've got players that say, coach, I'm not LeBron James, man. You know, he can say what he wants, but I'm worried about getting a job. I'm worried about my NFL draft. So what I've learned is, we all need to talk. We all need to listen and learn. We need to embrace differences, because that we can learn more from embracing differences. And by doing that, then we can have good conversation, because we've researched it and we're intelligent about it. Let's don't scream. Let's don't shout. I don't like burning businesses of innocent people who had nothing to do with the racism. I don't like the abuse that happens in protest, where police are beating honest people who have an opinion. So we've got to rethink this, and let's talk, let's learn, let's have conversation, let's work for proper change. Let's just don't scream at each other and yell at each other because we don't agree with an opinion somebody has, I get naive to a point that I think, why are we talking about color in 2021? I mean, why are we even talking about it? Come on, man. I thought when President Obama became president, we'd be through with that. I thought we were actually through. I went to a school in Houston, the large majority, minority, and the kids, I've never seen happier kids. They all thought they could be president the next morning. And I thought, how cool. And then we have Hillary running. And I thought, yeah, women can be president. People of color can be president. We're okay. Let's move on. Let's just have our world now. And let's embrace everybody in it. And whether we agree or not, it's okay. You know, you can agree to disagree, but don't scream. Don't fight.
I'll tell you, that is the trickery of a very complex, that's what structural racism does. It makes us think that we can put our guards down, but there are people out there, and clearly, you know, the FBI has done the reports that white supremacists have infiltrated the police, the military, and of course they're in all the other systems. But when we believe that we can trust and hold hands and kumbaya and work on racial justice and policy and all the things that are necessary to have a healed, healthy country, then here comes racism. So it's almost like we have to keep, well, not almost like, we have to keep our eyes on the focus. And for me, as much as I do training and skills work and strategy and tactics, to me, it's heart work, coach. This is heart work. This is about love. Bottom line, I'm not trying to get preachy or anything like that, but I believe ultimately it's about connecting with one another as humans, because the Human Genome Project said we're 99.98% alike. Where's the love?
No question. What I think we've got to do, Doc, is really work to change those that are evil that have infiltrated different areas. When I first got to Texas, the last all-white national championship football team was at Texas in 1971. Mm. So the older Black communities in the state of Texas were angry and didn't want their sons to come because I couldn't get in. That's so why would I want my grandson to come? And we had to go through a process then of talking about, let's start over. Wow. Let's make sure that we're looking at what's best instead of what's in the past. Let's fix it.
And what's powerful is that that wasn't that long ago.
No. And I was fortunate that I went to Vanderbilt, and one of the first Black athlete in the SEC was Perry Wallace. And That's he right. was a basketball player. Mm-hmm. And I watched him. He was 2 years older than me. And then we had three African-American football players on our team. Never thought about it. Never thought about Perry, people slurring him from the stands. Never mm-hmm. thought about it. Never mm-hmm. thought about the three kids on our team that were of color, what they must have gone through. I just, mm-hmm. because they were teammates.
That's right.
And I've often thought I probably should call Perry and say, you know, I'm really sorry.
No, no apology.
I didn't even think about you having to do things and go through things different from me. So I talked to our team about the 60s.
Good.
I remember Mr. Meredith going to Ole Miss. I remember the walk at Selma and how awful. I remember the riots. I remember the burning and the protest and the beatings. And I thought we were through that. Mm-hmm. And I really did. And to see the protest this year, I said it, this is just revisiting our history. Yeah. And I thought we were fixed and we got to fix it. We're seeing more now because of video.
That's right.
There's a lot of people that have been harmed that nobody ever knew about. And now it's coming to surface because, thank goodness, we've got police video of everything that happens now. So we're aware and it needs to change.
Well, thank you for relaying that about your experience at Vanderbilt. I was interviewed recently and it got some publicity, and one of my teammates called me from way back when we played together at Virginia in the late 70s, early 80s. And she said, I had no idea that this was going on. I was the first Black female scholarship athlete at Virginia. And you might not know this, but I was the first Black assistant coach. Well, no, first Black female coach at Carolina when I coached with Jennifer Alley. And when you're going through it, you don't notice anything. But then later on in life, you can reflect. You can reflect.
Yeah. And sports is different.
Yes. It's a cushion. It's an insulation. Because you mentioned a bubble. That's very true.
If the world was run like a locker room, our world would be good. Because people don't look at color. You don't even think about it. People hug and kiss and brag on and yell at. But it's not about color. It's about personalities. It's about what things should be. And that's why I love sports so much.
Well, inside the locker room, the sport business world, that's where it's a system. And that's where we have to draw attention. But tell me about your team this year with the patch. How did that come about? I know that's created a great buzz with the Tar Heel Nation. I think it's awesome. Tell me about the roots of that.
Things start coming up that are happening in our lives with race. And a lot of our guys haven't seen this stuff before. And it's there. It's real. And I think the George Floyd stuff was so awful. Mm-hmm. And we all saw it. We saw it repeatedly. And even in the trial, I was told, I tell our team, some of them shouldn't watch it because it's really emotionally hard and it's a mental strain. So be careful when you watch it. So, and maybe it's cowardly of me. I didn't watch it. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I could. I didn't want to see somebody die with a guy's knee on his neck. I couldn't do it.
No, that's self-care.
I sat there one day and tried, and I turned it off. I just couldn't do it. So we really sat down and we started dialogue. Our staff, I had two staff members that said, one white, one Black, best friends, room office right next to each other, didn't speak for 3 days. So I hear that, and I'm thinking, ooh, that's tough. And then I feel the strain on our country and our world. And I'm watching protests like everybody else. So we pulled everybody together in the staff room and I said, okay, what's this deal? And the white guy said, I don't know what to say. It's awful. And I can't walk in his office. I feel bad. I'm white. A white man killed a black man. And I don't know what to say. And the coach of color said, you know, same here. I know it's uncomfortable and I don't know what to say. So I said, why don't we say what we think? Why don't you walk in and say, how bad is this? This is awful. I feel so bad. Because you're not the white man. You're the man. You're the person talking about somebody who got killed and how awful it is. And then we started talking about the N-word. And we started talking about white in our world, mm-hmm. the white kids and the white coaches are the minority. How much pressure is there on the minority? How are you supposed to act? And then we ask everybody, if a white player is singing a song and the N-word comes up, does that make you mad as a black person? They said, absolutely. But as a black player, I can sing the song and the word comes up. So that's really confusing. So why is it not a song? Well, that word's awful. Why is it awful for the white player, but not the black player? So our team is so good, Debbie. They decided not to use the word. They threw it out. We don't use it in the locker room. We don't use it in any song because it's a word that divides people.
I like what you said. Our team decided.
No, we had a vote. We had a full discussion on just the N-word and where it fits. And then we started into the protests this summer with the NBA protest, the hockey leagues protesting, baseball's protesting, WNBA. And so I told the guys, let's talk. You want to miss practice? You want to protest? What do you want? Let's talk. And let's figure out what we want to do. And I said, the NCAA is allowing us to have a patch this year for something if you want it, like the NBA. And they said, we have a leadership committee of about 23 kids that the team chooses. Mm-hmm. And I said, take it to the leadership committee. And then you all talk to the team and come back to me with ideas.
Now, this leadership team is different from captains.
Oh, yeah. No, there's 23 of them. So they came back and Tamon Fox is one of our players, is a really great artist. And we told him to come up with a patch and the leadership committee did. So he came up with an unbelievable patch and yes. We showed it to the team and we voted and they all said 100%. So that was for every game. And then we said, what about the name on the back of the jerseys? We'd love to do it for Notre Dame because that's where we'll have the most exposure. I said, that's fine. I'll approve it through the administration, but that's what you want. That's what we'll do. And then I said, put a well thought message on the back of your jersey. Don't just throw something out there and don't do something LeBron did. Do something that's important to you. It was a way for our guys to share their feelings publicly without getting in trouble because it was a team message. The patch was a team message, and that white, that's Hispanic, that's black. It was a team message about change. It was not an individual message. And we found that the individual messages should probably come from me because I don't care if people get mad at me or not. I'm in my last job, so I'm good. So let me do it and let me make those decisions. And to people's credit, I got a couple of bad emails, but nothing at all like some people would have thought. We weren't trying to be disruptive, but we were trying to listen and learn and help understand that we need some things to change.
Well, I appreciate how that came about. I appreciate your courage, your boldness. I think much of the way that we're not moving towards love is because of fear. And people have this imaginary boogeyman out there that keeps them from taking action. And so you said, I'm going to do this, not only because of my experience, my clout, my position, all of that, because it's the right thing to do. You didn't care about emails that might come in, hate mail, all of that. But there are some people, in particular, some white people in leadership who feel that there's this imaginary boogeyman out there that prevents them to take that very important leadership step. And so, again, I salute you. I know there's language out there that's called ally. I don't like ally because that just tends to imply that you're working behind or beside. I like a accomplice. I like co-conspirator. I like ally hyphen leader. And certainly that is definitely what you are. I mean, you are leading from the front. So I want to make sure I say that to you. So I appreciate it. And I'm very, very grateful that so much more research is coming into this space. And we're lifting up people who've been working on this for decades. And we are so appreciative that you are not only the head coach of UNC football, but also you are a leader. You are a leader at the university and the state of North Carolina. So final question, coach, when it's all over and you're sitting in your rocking chair watching your favorite team play and you reflect back on your career in so many different ways, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for a guy who worked really, really hard and always did what he knew was the right thing to do. And I probably wasn't always that way. I've grown to this, and I've grown through some mistakes. I've grown through some really stupid things that I've done. I've gone through some people that I've been so blessed that I've had great leaders and people that I've had as counsel for me. And I've asked them hard questions. And I took 5, 6, 7 people that I really admired and said, why are you successful? And what makes you right and good? And then I would give them things that I was struggling with. How would you handle this? What would you do? And I wouldn't always do what they told me they would do, but at least I could take it in and I could listen and I could research it in my mind to a point that I'd move it around and see if it fit me. So what I want is he did it with class. He worked really hard. He always did what he knew was the right thing to do. And I do want the fans, the university, our student body and our players to know that when we were here, they had fun. One of the best things is when young people come up now that are older and say, when you were here before, I had so much fun. And I thought, good, that's what we want.
Yeah.
That's part of the experience. Yeah. Part of reason young people choose a university is the sports and the fun and the parties and the feeling and the celebrating around a great win for their school. So I want to be part of that joy and happiness when I'm through.
Well, you've certainly done that and then some. So thank you again, Coach Mack Brown, University of North Carolina football. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you, Doctor. And thanks for all you do.